He's got a beautiful backswing.
Oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
What is good, everybody? Welcome into the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. Sam Humphreys, Taylor Williams with you today, and we are joined by very special guest later on in the show, so stay tuned. We got Abraham Anser, the most recent winner on LIV, won at LIV Hong Kong in a playoff over Cam Smith and Paul Casey. We'll talk to him about that. We'll also talk about his time at Oklahoma, and he's maybe going to finally settle that Chet Wembanyama debate that we've been having here in Oklahoma City. Stay tuned for that later on in the show. We also have one of the founding fathers of the 73rd Hole Podcast, Colby Powell, formerly of the Golf Channel, coming on the show to help us preview the Players Championship. But T-Dub, before we do all of that, we got to recap a great week last week at Bay Hill, and Scottie Scheffler, T-Dub, has learned how to putt. Everyone needs to watch out.
What an absolutely jam-packed show that we have coming up. I cannot wait to dive into it. Wish our man Woody was here to break it all down, but we will go ahead and go back into the past while we're doing it and talk about what was video game-like golf, Sam, and Scottie Scheffler going out and shooting a 6-under in the final round when the stroke average was more than a shot over par. So he gained more than 7 shots on the round by shooting the 6-under. It was absolutely stellar golf. The next best round was 4-under shot by Degala and Ben On. And you would say at any point, if Scottie Scheffler can just gain a few shots on the greens or just point shots on the greens, that he would be able to dominate golf tournaments. And you look in the final round, he gained almost 4 shots on the greens, Sam. It's absolutely unheard of to go with 1.5 shots off the tee, 0.7 shots approach, and a full shot around the greens. Not a flaw in the game. Everything's next level superb. It would have been a competition between him and 2005 Tiger with how good he was playing on Sunday.
And T-Dub, that's what we've been talking about, right? I mean, if he could just putt average on a week, then he's going to win, because his ball striking over the last year and a half has been that of prime Tiger Woods. He's first in every single ball striking strokes gained category. I can sit here and bore you, but spoiler alert, they're all first. You know, he's first in strokes gained, first in off the tee, all of that. The guy is unbelievable as far as ball striking goes, and we've just been waiting and waiting since really last year at the Players. But even last year at the Players, he didn't putt as good as he did this week. He gets that one tip from Rory McIlroy. Rory says, go to a mallet. It only makes sense, and he does that. He goes to the TaylorMade Spider mallet putter, and guess what? He just starts making everything teed up. I'm not saying he's going to putt like this every single week, but if he could just putt average and maybe get some confidence from this week at Bay Hill, we may be in for some historical golf from Scottie Scheffler.
Every single aspect is stellar. It's very rare that we see this. Usually you'll have one elite or two elite categories, and then the rest are mediocre. Victor Hovland is a good example of that. He does the other three really well, but he doesn't have the short game. Scottie Scheffler is one of the best, maybe the best short game in the game of golf. And you look at the times where he's gained a full shot on the greens, and that's exceptionally good putting. But at the same time, there's pros at this level can have multiple weeks a year wherever that happens. The last time he gained a full shot on the greens for a week was the Waste Management in 2023. What did he do? He won. The last time he gained a full shot on the greens before that was 2002 at Bay Hill, where he won. Before that, he gained 1.63 on the greens at the Waste Management in 2022, where he won. So if there is any time that Scottie Scheffler putts really, really well like this, it's not only is he going to win, Sam, he's going to absolutely dominate, because we asked the question, what would happen first? Does he fix the putter? Does the iron play and the ball striking regress a little bit lower to where he's not finishing as high? Because he hadn't been able to win, but he's finishing so high, collecting so many paychecks. And I think we've seen this, Sam. I think this mallet putter is going to be at least the difference, where he's not going to be absolutely horrible on the greens like he was before. He'll make one or two more putts a tournament, which at that level is a really big difference. And for Scottie Scheffler, it's a massive, massive difference.
And it's got to be a big relief for him, right? I mean, every single week you're up there in the top five and all of the ball striking stats. But like you said, when you're reading off those strokes gained on the greens, you say over a full shot. We're talking per round that Scottie Scheffler was gaining over a full shot on the greens per round this week. It's got to be a massive relief to him that his fruits of his great ball striking are finally paying off, considering he's finally figured out something with the putter. And T-Dub, I got to give it up to myself a little bit. I said last year, Scottie Scheffler finishes top five at Bay Hill, didn't even putt that good. We kind of have a similar thing this week at the Players. Last year, he finished tied for 48th in strokes gained putting last year at the Players, and he won the Players. That's how ridiculous his ball striking was last year at TPC Sawgrass. So as we head into this week, and we'll talk more about this with Colby, if he could just putt average and hit the ball like he's hit it pretty much over these last 2 years, the guy is an obvious favorite, not only this week at the Players, but at Augusta National, another place that he's won before.
Well, he's just clearly the best player in the game right now, and it's not even close. Maybe Joaquin Neiman or John Rahm would have a claim at that title per se, but I'm not going to take anyone against Scottie Scheffler right now, especially the fact that he's gotten the putter figured out. And you look at the stats this week, it's very positive to see that in the first round he lost more than a shot and a half on the greens, but then after that gained half a shot on the green second round, gained 1.5 shots in the third round, and then we've already talked about the almost 4 shots he gained in the fourth round. So every single round he got better, which means that he was building confidence, getting more used to the mallet putter, and hopefully that'll be a trend that we see going into the Players' Championship this week, because he wasn't, as you alluded to, what, 45th, middle of the pack or so. He did gain 0.13 shots on the greens last year. So it was one of those things where he didn't putt absolutely horrible and he still won the tournament. So I don't expect the ball striking to be horrendously worse. He gains of more than a full shot off the tee every single time with the iron. Sometimes he gains more than 2 shots approach the green. And on a course like Pete Dye, where there's a lot of quirkiness, maybe that's going to be the only thing that holds him up. Maybe have a couple of bad bounces, get a few water balls where he shouldn't, or maybe have a bad break on 17, something like that. But other than that, Sam, I don't know what's going to get in his way.
Yeah, I don't think anything's going to get in Scottie Scheffler's way, considering how perfect he is in every single category. Stuff we haven't seen since prime Tiger Woods. Let's talk about the guy who finished third before we talk about the guy that finished second. Shane Lowry last week at the Cognizant Classic, where Austin Eckroat won, did not have a good final round, and it was another disappointing final round this week at Bay Hill. Last week on the front nine, after having a share of the 54-hole lead at the Cognizant Classic, he shot 2 over par. He had 18 putts, not very good. This week, after having a share of the lead with Scottie Scheffler after 54 holes, he goes out, shoots 2 over par on the front nine at Bay Hill, and, you know, has 15 putts, only hit 2 fairways on his front nine this past week at Bay Hill. So what do you see in Shane Lowry's game in the final round, where he's not playing as consistently good golf as he is in the first 54 holes? Kind of the same story, different week, back-to-back weeks for Shane Lowry.
Well, that's obviously something he's hadn't been comfortable with, or isn't at least at this moment. He's a major champion, so he's been in the heat of the moment. And as you mentioned, he finished fourth last week and finished third this week, and even before that, had been playing a little bit of decent golf going back to the end of 2023. But as for the last time that he actually contended in a tournament, you're going to have to go back to the 2022 BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. So it's been, what is that, a year and a half. So it's something that you have to be comfortable with. Last two difficult golf courses in PGA National and then Bay Hill. So it's tough to, if you're not feeling 100% committed to what you're doing, you can definitely lose a stray and make some bogeys. And he was 3 over through the first 7 holes. And when the guy you're playing against, Scottie Scheffler's 2 under through 7, and Scheffler ends up playing his last 25 holes at 10 under par, there's nothing you're going to be able to do. Lowry's able to go his last 10 holes at 3 under par to salvage a solo third finish, which was just for some money and some points. He never had a chance to win the tournament at that point. So it's one of those things to where Scheffler ran off and ran away with it. But Lowry could have at least made it a little bit more interesting had he played the first 7 holes at even par or even 1 over. Could have at least somewhat stayed close and maybe would have made a little bit more of a charge. But Scheffler playing as well as he was, wasn't going to crumble even as difficult of a course as Bay Hill is.
No doubt. And Scottie Scheffler wins by 5 at 15 under. Wyndham Clark down there at 10 under par in second place, shoots 2 under in the final round. Wyndham Clark continuing his great play since last year. The former Cowboy obviously stared Xander Schauffele down at Quail Hollow last year at the signature event, then goes on to win the U.S. Open in L.A. This year, he broke the course record at Pebble Beach, and now he's still playing very, very elite golf. Second place this week at the API. What are your thoughts on Wyndham Clark? And then we can get into the little bit of controversy that Wyndham Clark had this week as well.
Well, as far as his game goes, it's either extreme boom or very mediocre around middle of the pack or even a little bit below. They finished second at the Arnold Palmer this week. Misses the cut to Genesis, 41st Waste Management. Wins Pebble Beach, as you're alluding to, 39th at American Express. Finished 29th at the Century. So it's one of those things where he either finds the form and putts really good with the putter. Those two high finishes, he gained more than a shot and a half on the greens. And so maybe that's something to look at, because the other four events in there, he lost strokes on the green. So that seems to be really the difference maker there, is on if he's hot or cold with the putter. This week, he was very hot with the putter. So that definitely kept his game up there. He did gain more than a shot approach and off the tee. So he played great golf really all around. Definitely not calling him out on that whatsoever. But he's primed for the big moments. Already has a major championship, has won at elite golf courses at Pebble Beach and Quail Hollow. Almost got it done. And Arnold Palmer, for some reason, the analytics don't like him much at the Players, but it wouldn't shock me at all if he was able to add TPC Sawgrass onto his Manila Players Championship. Only 30 years old, Wyndham Clark has a very, very bright future ahead of him when it comes to his play, because he's a really good putter, above average putter. He's just been streaky for whatever reason at the start of this year. And he absolutely crushes the ball, has a very good technical golf swing. So a lot more great golf coming from Wyndham Clark for sure.
No doubt about it. Now, the controversy that I mentioned on Saturday in his third round on 18, he was tied for the lead with Scottie Scheffler. He's in the rough, has this shot over the water, and the camera zooms in, and every time we get one of those cameras zooming in on a guy hitting a shot out of the rough, we had it with Hideki a couple weeks ago. They determined the ball did not move. In this situation, the ball definitely moves a little bit, but I don't know, T-Dub. This is one of those things where I don't necessarily think it would be fair to penalize a guy like Wyndham Clark, who's playing in the final group with all the cameras on him. Obviously, it's so minute that he couldn't have even been able to tell that his ball even moved. They even had Scottie Scheffler review the slow-mo replay after, and Scottie said it didn't really move enough for him to be penalized. What were your thoughts on whether Wyndham Clark should have been penalized on 18 at Bay Hill this past week in the third round?
I think the correct decision was made. I don't think he should have been penalized. It's one of those situations where you want to test the lie, and people will say, well, how well are you testing the lie? Are you trying to improve it to make sure the rough, the grass isn't strictly behind the ball to where you can get a little bit of club on it so it doesn't come out straight knuckling or duff straight into the water, which is a very, very tricky shot right there in itself. So, no, I don't think he should have been penalized. I don't think it's a completely egregious situation whatsoever. For whatever reason, controversy has surrounded Wyndham Clark this week. He had that situation he alluded to. He had a video going around on Twitter that I saw. He kind of flubbed a little 50-yard chip, and he completely hacked at the ground and took like a foot, like an 18-inch chunk out of it, and a lot of people were mad that he did that. And then he also came out and said that he wouldn't mind if the tour went to or had some sort of system where there was a top 100 players in it. And I just want to put this in perspective, Sam, and I honestly kind of had a shock moment when I realized this. Last year, I picked Wyndham Clark in our one-and-done pool at the Puerto Rico Open. That is how far Wyndham Clark has come on the last year. In the Puerto Rico Open, I picked him, and he wants to now all of a sudden say the top 100 player should play, whenever 16 months ago, Sam, he wasn't a top 100 player in the world.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because I almost feel like what he's trying to say is there should be, you know, two separate tours, which it almost already is, considering you have the signature events and then the regular season PGA Tour events. What is he saying that would be a whole lot different than what we already have?
It's essentially the same thing. It is. It's just funny that Rory's saying it. I don't have a problem with, because he's been a top 100 player for 15 years now. But whenever I had the realization that the Puerto Rico Open, which happened this last week, so a calendar year ago, in our one-and-done pool, I used Wyndham Clark there because he was playing in that event. He was heavily favored in that event, but the fact that he wasn't in whatever the opposite event was, it may have been this tournament, or like I said, whatever tournament it was, he wasn't in. So he played there. So he's come up a monumental rise over the last 12 to 16 months. It's just a little, I don't know, it's not very humbling to think about where you were so recently. I get that he's won a major championship, won on elite golf courses, so he has probably earned that right. But at the same time, man, it's there, but I don't understand why it needs to be put in that context.
The quote was, quote, "I think it'd be amazing if our tour was 100 guys," right? So right now, their tour is how many guys are PGA Tour members? It goes down to like 200, right? That are PGA Tour members. That you got, you know, the top 125 every single year keep their card. I don't even know how it works anymore. It's so freaking confusing with all the Korn Ferry Tour finals and all of that stuff. But my point is, the real PGA Tour, the top level PGA Tour, is the top 70 guys that get into the signature events. So it's pretty much two tours already, like Wyndham Clark is saying. But I get what you're saying too, T-Dub, that you're saying you just made it onto the PGA Tour. Now you want to cut all these guys that are trying to make it onto the PGA Tour out.
100%. I mean, the tour being 100 players, it's smaller than that, in all honesty. Looking here at the data golf rankings going down up until the top 40 to 50 are really good players. But then after that are names that especially the general fan doesn't know. Obviously, we would know them. But definitely not going to be guys that dream, and that's about 50 on data golf. That's not including the 10, 12 guys that are on live who are inside the top 50. So yeah, I don't necessarily have a problem with what he said. I think he's 100% correct. It's just that he could have, at least, I don't want to be that he should have phrased it differently. It's just that you were just there a year ago. You weren't even in this tournament, and now you want to make it smaller. I don't know. It didn't seem like that he acknowledged that part right of it, and I wish that he would have.
No, I agree. I agree with that. Now, similar to that, we had Jay Monahan's press conference at the Players today, and he said that they are close to getting a deal done with Yasir Al-Rumayyan and the PIF. Are we actually closer to a world tour this week than we have been the previous times we've heard from Jay Monahan, T-Dub? What do you think?
Boy, I have absolutely no idea. I wish that I had a clue. I wish any of us had a clue. I'm not exactly sure. So I don't know. Hopefully that we are. Hopefully we're reaching a point to where maybe we could have something to go about. But until then, we're going to have a great event this week, even though it's missing some of the biggest names. And we'll have another great live event the week before the Masters. And then we'll have the Masters coming up where most of the great players will be there, which there are definitely a few more names that should be. But hopefully if we could just get that corrected to where we had all the majors right, then that wouldn't bother me whatsoever. But at the end of the day, hopefully some sort of deal will transpire. But at this point, I have no clue.
I have no clue either. You know, you hear rumors that the PIF could buy the DP World Tour and turn that into a world tour. I don't know how it's all going to work out. But what I do know, T-Dub, is that we need the best top name players in the world from both tours playing together more than four times a year at the major championships. And unfortunately, even at the majors right now, given all of the stuff with the OWGR, you don't even get all of the best players from LIV in these major championships. So something needs to be figured out. Cooler heads need to prevail, and common sense needs to prevail as well going forward on the PGA Tour and LIV, so we can get these guys together more than, you know, four times a year.
Oh, extremely well said there, Sam. I think that's 100% right. And hopefully it does transpire. It's just we're kind of in a, like I said, a guessing limbo process now where we're hopefully going to get it figured out at the end of the day. Hopefully the golf gods will lead us in the proper direction, as I do believe that they will. Maybe that's just my optimism, as I've said millions of times on this show. But that is what I'm sticking to it, Sam, because I feel like if we're going to be pessimistic about it, then what's the point if the pessimistic comes? What are we going to do? Be the guy during the apocalypse saying, ha ha, I was right. See, I was right. What good is that going to do?
Yeah, exactly. We're not trying to say we were right, they were wrong. That's what both sides are doing right now, T-Dub. And I just feel like were so close to realizing, and these guys, Jay Monahan and Yasser Al-Rumayyan, are so close to realizing what we've been trying to say this entire time, T-Dub, is that there's so much money to be made if you just have all of the best players in the world playing against each other on a more regular basis, but those players are also compensated with guaranteed money, which is why Liv started in the first place. I think we will get there. Honestly, if you hear what Jay Monahan's saying now compared to this time last year, we've come a long way. We just don't have the deal done yet.
100% right. There's definitely workings done. It's just at this point, it's a little bit of tug of war action. You're going to see, well, this guy wants maybe 60% of something, and then they want 60%. So now you can't have 120%. You have to have 100%. So you're going to have to divvy that up some way, and that's probably numerous factors are going in that direction. So it's just going to be a meet in the middle. Unfortunately, both sides will have to sacrifice a couple of things that they want, but hopefully they can come to some agreement that benefits both sides in a lot of areas, which I think that they will. Unfortunately, when you're dealing with billions of dollars at play, there's got to be a lot of inner workings to that, and there's going to be a lot of time, unfortunately. Whenever June 6th came around, we thought maybe they could get something done in 6 months. In all honesty, that's a little bit crazy to think that you could have gotten every single thing figured out in that short of time frame. So hopefully it does happen, but it is going to take a little bit of time.
No doubt. And whenever they do finally come to an agreement, talking about the PIF and the PGA Tour, I hope that the major championships choose golf instead of sides in all of this. And hopefully we get guys like the individual reigning champion on Liv, Taylor Gooch, into major championships. We need all of the best players in the world in the major championships, at least. That's what makes them major championships. T-Dub, any final thoughts on Bay Hill before we move on and talk to our man Abe Anser?
Well, Bay Hill is just a tremendous golf course. It brings out really the best players in the best golf, and we saw Scottie Scheffler do historically great stuff down there. So it was absolutely great to see. Hopefully we'll see more legendary performance like this again, because at the end of the day, it does make for a little bit boring on Sunday, not having a little bit of action going on when he's playing that great. But at the same time, it's historic stuff that we were seeing. So that's great to see. And we haven't mentioned Will Zalatoris yet. He finished fourth place, and that's a very good, encouraging thing. He finished second to Genesis. So good to see that he's healthy, very naturally talented player. Only 27 years old, dealing with all those back injuries. Looks like he's getting back into the form that we saw when he almost won a PGA championship at Southern Hills just right up the road from us.
No doubt. Willie Z is back, and his back is healthy, and he is striping it right now, especially with the irons gaining over a shot and a half on the field per round over the last two events for Willie Z, and the long putter looks a whole lot more solid, especially with the short ones for our man Willie Z. Good to have him back playing some elite golf. Before we get to Abe Anser, T-Dub, let's recap Liv Hong Kong, where Abe Anser did get the victory. Abe Anser wins in a three-man playoff over Paul Casey and Cam Smith, birdies that playoff hole after shooting two over in the final round. He shot 7-under, 8-under, and then 2-over in the third round, but he gets that birdie in the playoff for the win. And then as far as the team goes, the crushers, our man Charles Howell III and Bryson DeChambeau, Paul Casey, who was in that playoff, and Honor Bond Lahiri win by two at 35-under over Team Torquay, who was 33-under, and then Cam Smith's team, Team Ripper, was 32-under in solo third place. T-Dub, what were your thoughts on Liv Hong Kong this week before we get to Abe Anser?
Ended up being a great final round. You thought with Abe having a five-shot lead at 15-under, next best was 10-under, you would have thought, well, man, you know, hopefully he'll go out and win by, he may not win by more than five that he was leading to, but he can go out and win by two or three, that kind of thing. He ends up going out and shooting two over 72. He had three bogeys in the final round. Did not have a bogey in the first two rounds. Absolutely great golf there. He makes three bogeys in the final round, adds a birdie on the 10th hole, then makes a great clutch birdie in the playoff with Cam Smith, who shot a 4-under in the final round. And Paul Casey, who actually holed out of the bunker on his last hole that he played, his last hole was 16, holed out of a bunker there to vault into the playoff. You had a couple guys, Carlos Ortiz, Joaquin Neiman, almost make it to the playoff. So it ended up being a very, very tight race coming down the stretch, but Abe clutched up in that playoff. Paul Casey teed off first in the playoff. It's one of those holes where you hit an iron or a five wood, as Abe hit off the tee, and then you hit some sort of a wedge or iron approach shot and Paul Casey in the playoff hits a little bit right and isn't able to go for the green. There's water right of the green, so he's not able to go at it. And then Cam Smith hits a horrible second shot with an 8-iron, puts it in the bunker. They both actually end up making bogey. So Abel on his 5-footer after hitting that great iron shot could have just 2-putted from there. But as a champion like he is, sewed it up, made the birdie to clutch the $4 million. Very solid from him and ended up what being a very, very cool final round of golf.
No doubt about it. Can't wait to talk to Abe Anser coming up after the break. Couple more names that I want to mention that are still playing really solid golf. Joaquin Niemann tied for fourth at 12 under par, one shot out of that playoff. And then tied for sixth was Bryson DeChambeau at 11 under par. Two guys to look out for as we head into Augusta.
Oh, absolutely. They've been playing exceptional golf. And then for the team concept, you mentioned earlier, the Crushers getting the win on man Charles Howell III. They got the win in Jeddah as well. And then they had a second in Mayakoba. So they've had a tremendous start to the season. They have 100 and they have exactly 100 points in the team race. The next highest is 58, Team Torquay. So they're off to a very, very decent lead. Love to see that from our man Charles Howell. They've had a great finish. And that team looks like they're coming together. All four of those players playing very, very solid as of recent.
The Crushers definitely continuing their great play after winning the team championship last year. Let's talk to the Fireball's own and former Oklahoma Sooner, Abe Anser, coming up after the break here on Oklahoma's Leader in Golf, the 73rd Hole Podcast. We would like to welcome in a new sponsor to the 73rd Hole Podcast, Jimmy Austin Golf Club in Norman, Oklahoma. If you have any Sooner apparel needs or apparel needs in general, this is the golf shop to go to. Jimmy Austin Golf Shop has been rated as the top merchandising facility in all of the South Central section 5 out of the last 7 years. In addition to their phenomenal pro shop, Jimmy Austin is also going to be hosting a Korn Ferry event again this year, the Compliance Solutions Championship. On June 20th through the 23rd, you can come out to Jimmy Austin and see the stars of the future on the PGA Tour competing in the Compliance Solutions Championship on the Korn Ferry Tour. I also want to encourage all of our listeners out there to go out to Jimmy Austin and play some golf. It's one of, if not the best, public facility in Oklahoma, and it always ranks in the top 5 best courses in Oklahoma to play golf. So if you want to play like a champion, next time you're booking your tee time, remember, there's only one Jimmy Austin Golf Club. And we are back on the other side of the break on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. And as I said before the break, we are joined by a brand new guest who did play his college golf in Oklahoma at the University of Oklahoma. We'll definitely get to that. But the bigger storyline right now is this guy just won on LIV for the first time, Abraham Anser. Abe, thanks for taking the time and joining the podcast today.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Man, you got a great voice.
Thanks, I appreciate that. So Abe, I mean, let's talk about this week. I mean, you go out there, you shoot 13 under for the golf tournament, you beat Cam Smith and Paul Casey in the playoff with an unbelievable shot in there, make birdie in the playoff. Just take me through this week and how awesome it is to win on LIV for the first time.
Man, it was a really, really cool week. Never been to Hong Kong before. City is phenomenal. Food's really, really cool. Really cool culture. And then the golf course, I fell in love with the golf course. You got to shape the ball both ways. You don't really need to hit it very long. But the par threes are really tough, undulated greens, elevated. So it was a really cool golf course. And game was trending in the right direction. I started the year a little bit, felt a little rusty, I guess. But it was trending, and in Jeddah, played pretty well, shot a nice round, and that kind of went with a little bit of momentum into that week. And it just kind of everything fell into place. The first 2 days, I played really solid, 7-under, 8-under, bogey-free, feeling really good, and I had a 5-shot lead going to the last day. And then I guess somebody switched the switch off, and I could not hit the right shot. on that last round, but it was definitely a grind. Feeling the pressure there a little bit, it was nice to feel that, and managed to make some parts coming in. It was a little bit of kind of funky weather. It got a little chilly and rainy, so it wasn't. It was playing definitely a little bit tougher. But yeah, it was cool to make two good swings on 18 there to remain that playoff, and then hit another two good shots to make birdie and win the playoff. But it was definitely a lot more stressful than I wanted to be. But it was really, really cool finish.
Hey, just take us through the mindset that you had in that final round. You start the deficit, you get as far as you do the first two rounds. You end up going into a playoff with Cam Smith, one of the best players in the game right now, and Paul Casey, one of the best ball strikers in the history of the game. So just talk to us about your mindset and the composure that you needed to refocus and hit two great shots as you did the playoff.
Yeah, I mean definitely it was, I was really proud of how I kind of kept together mentally, because it definitely could have been a really bad round and just pretty much obviously lose it all and not even finish close to that playoff. So it was, like I said, really proud of kind of keeping me together and just told myself that I had been there before. I hit some good shots and in regulation on 18, which is a really demanding tee ball, and then a pretty tough second shot there if you're not in a perfect spot. And yeah, I guess just visualizing a good shot and just going about my routine and just pulling the trigger, trying not to think too much. Thankfully, they come out straight in the fairway and then hit a really good second shot in there to hit it close and make birdie.
That's good stuff. Now, Abe, one of our mutual friends and friend of this show, Michael Gellerman, a.k.a. Bob, who, by the way, is doing golf lessons here in Oklahoma City. So if any of our listeners out there want a golf lesson from a guy that played on the PGA Tour, at Oh You Know Mike on Twitter. But Gellerman wanted me to ask you this question. He says, ask Abe if the golf he played the first 2 days this past week at Live Hong Kong was better, or the week straight that you played with Gellerman out at Jimmy Austin in college where you didn't make a bogey. Is that true?
That is true. Yeah. Me and Bob would play a lot. We were some of the, I guess, two guys that we had a very similar game, and we didn't really like to hit that many balls, but we definitely loved to play. And yeah, we played for a week straight. And somehow I didn't make a bogey, obviously playing really solid and just getting up and down from everywhere. So it was a really cool week. I wish we were in a tournament or something, but yeah, it was all there at Jimmy Austin. It was pretty cool. So I guess it was pretty similar. There were, those two rounds that I played in Hong Kong were I wouldn't say picture perfect, but every shot that I was envisioning, I was able to pull off. And if I didn't hit a green, I think I missed two. I was able to get up and down. So yeah, I guess it was pretty similar golf that I got to play those 2 days, and then the week in Oklahoma with Bob.
Hey, for a lot of people, playing a week golf bogey free would probably be the best event that they had during their college experience. But for you, what was your favorite moment of your collegiate time in Norman, Oklahoma?
I think we had a really bunch of good memories. Obviously winning as a team was really cool. I went in at a time when Coach Hibble that was his first year, and at the time Coach Smart. So we were more in a rebuilding kind of stage, per se. And just, I have a ton of memories, on the golf course and outside the golf course with the team and the coaches. I'm still pretty close to a bunch of guys, and definitely Hibble texts me almost every tournament, or just, you know, he's always there. But I will say, I was actually talking about this with Harold Varner, because we were paired together the final round. We were also paired together in Nationals, Riviera, when we played together there. It was me, Harold, and Thomas Peters, and we were talking about how Thomas Peters in that last round, he ended up winning the tournament individually. And I mean, we were both talking about how we were so far away from the kind of golf he was playing. Obviously at the time, we didn't know where we were going to be. I guess 13 or 14 years after. And we were talking about that final round. So that was a pretty cool memory. And then now, I guess we're all three were playing at LIV, and we played on the PGA Tour before. And it's really cool how at one point you see your game so far away from what you think it should be at. But in reality, it's maybe not that far away. So it was a cool little story that we had this past Sunday.
Abe, we've had Taylor Gooch on this show. We've had Charles Howell III on this show. And one of the things they talk about that they love about LIV is having teammates. And obviously, you guys add David Puig this year. You still got Eugenio Lopez Chikara. But the guy I want to ask you about is Sergio Garcia. My question's simple. What is Sergio Garcia like? Obviously, on the golf course, but what is he like just, you know, hanging out with a guy like Sergio every single day?
He's just a normal dude. Loves sports, so he's always watching either Formula One or European football or you name it, tennis, a big tennis guy. So, but yeah, he's just a normal guy. I mean, he's a guy that has been playing professional golf for a long time. He definitely knows what he's talking about. He's been good for a really long time, and like he's always played. I don't even think he's ever got hurt. So he's played a lot of golf. He has a lot of experience, and he's one of the most competitive guys I've ever met. So that's why, you know, he's good. He does not like to lose on really anything he plays. And we get some really cool matches going with the team and the practice rounds to kind of get ready and to feel some pressure. And even then, I mean, you can see how bad he wants to win, even just in a practice round playing golf or whatever it is. So like I said, just a normal dude, just super competitive.
Hey, ever since LIV started up almost 2 years ago now, there have been a lot of things said on the mainstream media, per se, things that we all know are not true and things that are really just trying to blast players and things like that. So ever since you've made the jump, what are some misconceptions that you've heard spread around that you just know for a fact shouldn't be said and things that LIV players are getting hated on for reasons that they shouldn't be?
I mean, I guess you can name a bunch, but I like to actually kind of just stay away from all that, and I don't get too political or polarizing or whatever you really want to name it. I just, the thing is that I felt like maybe a lot of the narrative was that, I mean, these guys got paid and they're not really even practicing or they don't really care anymore. But I mean, I tell you what, it is definitely extremely competitive. And for me personally, these last 2 years, and I guess I talked about this right after in the interviews in Hong Kong, I was pretty frustrated not being able to see results. I felt like I put in a lot of work in this past years and just the game felt there, but I wasn't really getting any results. So I feel like guys out there are grinding. You see the way they practice. And like I said, personally, these last 2 years, I guess I just wanted to prove myself and I wanted to win so bad. But I feel like everybody's hungry out there as well. So I guess there's one big misconception of people think that, these guys got paid over there and they don't even care where they play. I know everybody in that group wants to win the tournament every week. So I guess that's the one for me.
No doubt. And LIV's getting more competitive by the week. You know, obviously adding John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton this year. Definitely very, very competitive tournaments. And my question is, did it take you a while to kind of get accustomed to the new LIV tournaments? Or do you think it was just the game was, you know, not quite as good as it was back in 21 when you won the FedEx St. Jude? And obviously at the end of last year, you had some really solid finishes, figuring it out, tied for third at Bedminster. You know, you finished fourth at the International Series England, and you finished fifth in Chicago, and now you get a win early on in the year in Hong Kong. Do you feel like, you know, you kind of got your feet under you on LIV, or do you think it had nothing to do with the move to LIV?
No, I just think I was just not doing a very good job mentally approaching the events. I felt like I wanted to win really bad. I wanted to be perfect, and I was just getting frustrated out there with just my results. So I think it's tough to obviously always have a solid year after year. So I was trending in the right nice direction for a while there. And then I think sometimes it's pretty normal to have a half a year or a year that you don't play terrible, but you don't see the results you want. And it takes a little time to figure out what that was. It's not like I was making any swing changes or anything like that. It's just, I guess, how golf goes. I felt like I got used to live pretty quick. One of the things that I noticed is that it feels like it's all gas. I mean, three rounds, so I feel like there's very little time for you to make mistakes. So I feel like you definitely need to go low or have one of the three rounds that is low, but you definitely can't afford to have a weak round unless you really, really crush the first two rounds to have a decent tournament. So, but yeah, no, I think it was just mentally I wasn't doing a good job, and I feel like to the end of this year and then obviously these first tournaments, I started feeling a lot better and doing a better job that way.
Hey, we're only a few days after you win, so this may be a little bit of time to assess this, but how do you look at your future goals for the rest of the year? It's always interesting when you have goals before the year or however it goes, then you accomplish a goal that you have, being able to win on LIV. So how do you assess that going forward? So how are you going to evaluate that as you go into April, May, into really the hot season of golf?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like to write down what my goals are for the year. Winning a tournament on LIV was definitely one of them, but there's plenty of others. I would definitely want to be in the Olympics in the summer, representing Mexico. Winning a medal for my country would be something really, really cool. Also have on there qualifying, because I got to go qualify for the Open and the U.S. Open. So successfully qualifying is one of them, and then having a really good finish or being contention or somehow pull it off and obviously win one of those is a dream and obviously always a goal. And yeah, there's plenty of stuff to play for. If you want to win one, then forget about that and try to get another one for sure.
Hey, my last question to you here. Actually, I have two more. I got one more about Coach Hibble, because we have OSU players tell Holder stories, and we got OU players tell Hibble stories. So stay tuned for that. But my question to you is, obviously, you know, you've made a ton of money since you went to LIV, but I think you probably made just as much, if not more, with Flecha Azul. Tell the people how you got started with Flecha Azul, your tequila, how you got linked up with Mark Wahlberg. I think that's a really cool story that not a lot of people know about you, Abe.
Well, it's actually related to golf in a way. I was playing at Colonial, I believe it's seven years ago. And in the pro-am, I got paired together with now my business partner, Aaron Marquez, who also attended Oklahoma and for his master's. And another Mexican guy, we just randomly got paired together. We started talking about tequila. We were both big fans of the spirit. And well, at the time, I mean, it was definitely like a dream or something that it was just, we all thought about, but at the time I didn't have the money or the time to start a company or to do that. We had some really good friends. They're like family in Tequila, Jalisco, where we make our tequila. The family, the Orendain family, we've been making tequila for 97 years. And then Aaron was like, man, I would love to give it a shot and see where that takes us. Cause like I said, we were both big fans of tequila and spreading the culture wherever we go. And we started working on the project right after that pro-am. And our dream was to kind of bring it to Texas, just see where it goes, see how we can keep it growing. We never thought we were then going to be paired up with Mark Wahlberg as partners and good friends and then have distribution all over the U.S. and now other countries. So it's definitely been a really cool journey and something that kind of awakened my, I guess, like entrepreneurial spirit. And it's been really, really cool. I've learned a lot about many things, obviously, about just starting something from nothing. And when you have a board and you have a sales team and you have distribution and marketing, I mean, it's a bunch of stuff that has been definitely very exciting. And it's been a really cool journey. And we're still a long ways away to where we want to go.
So is business tougher or professional golf tougher? Which world is tougher?
Man, they're both tough. And I feel like it's very similar. You gotta be consistent. And you gotta be present. I mean, I feel like like I said, it's very, very similar in a mental game. You can get pretty disappointed, and it can definitely look really tough at times. You're like, oh man, I don't think we're gonna be able to do this. But so I see it very, very similar in both ways, how you approach, I guess, business or creating a company to golf and professional golf. I think they're about the same.
Yeah, the very wise words there from Abe there. We've talked a lot about your play on the course whenever you won this weekend, but what I want to talk about after the win, take us to the celebration and what that was like.
Well, that was actually pretty quick. I already had a flight booked at 9:30 from Hong Kong coming back to the States. And we finished around, I think it was around 6. The playoff got soaked in, the team got me soaked in champagne, and we had some of that there. We had some media and pictures and all that good stuff. Take pictures with all the volunteers, all the board of Hong Kong Golf Club, which they were all really, really cool. And then they had a bottle of tequila over there that they put in my locker somehow. That was pretty incredible. So whenever I got back to my locker, me and my caddy had some just quick shots while we were changing and packing. And I mean, it was just a mess. And a lot of the caddies are rolling by and I guess congratulating us, and they're having a shot with us too. So it was quick. It was pretty cool. When I got to the airport, I was buzzed pretty good.
That's good stuff. Now, the last question I got for you that I mentioned earlier, Abe, we got to hear a Hibble story from your time in college. Ryan Hibble, one of our good friends on this podcast, we've had him on a few times and just a great guy. Now, he has a really nice side and he can also be tough. Do you have any funny stories of your time with Ryan Hibble?
Man, Hibble is the man. I absolutely love him. I feel like I owe him a lot, just giving me a shot without really obviously knowing me. It just recruited me. I guess he liked some of my stats because I went to junior college first, to Odessa Junior College, and then he gave me the opportunity to go to the University of Oklahoma, which I was super excited at the time, and now I feel like it was the best decision I've ever made. So he's a really, really cool guy, and he can definitely be super sweet, but man, he can be tough. He can definitely be tough. He'll scare you, so you don't want to miss workouts or be late at workouts, because you're not gonna like it. But I remember whenever he was recruiting me, he was like, "Hey, do you work out?" And at the time, I wasn't really doing much, to be honest. So he was like, "You better work out because you're gonna be sore, and then qualifying is gonna be pretty quick. So you're not feeling good, then it's not gonna be good for you." So I was like, "How hard could it be? I mean, it's not gonna be that bad." So I thought I worked out before I get in there. And then I had the first week of workouts, and just a Monday and Wednesday of like strength, and then Friday would do conditioning. And Friday, I've never thrown up like that. I mean, it was something ridiculous. I threw up like 3 times throughout these workouts, and it was so out of my league. I was like, what am I doing out here? I mean, I don't know what I shot in my first qualifying, but I know I didn't qualify for my first tournament there because I couldn't swing. And I probably, Coach Hill was just trying to figure out what he did recruiting me, because I could not swing for how sore I was. And I didn't want to say that I didn't want to work out, because obviously I wanted it just to fall in order, right? But he was telling me, he warned me to work out, and then I couldn't believe how brutal it was for me to try to play golf like that. But it taught me a lesson. And like I said, I owe the man a lot.
Very good. Well, Abe, thanks so much for your time. Good luck in Miami. By the way, that's coming up April 5th through the 7th on LIV Golf. Your most recent winner on LIV, Abraham Anser. And Abe, you're down there in San Antonio, right? This will be a question for the radio show on the Sports Animal tomorrow night. The San Antonio Spurs have this rivalry this year with the Oklahoma City Thunder, even though the Thunder's in first, and you got the Spurs down there in, what, 11, 12 wins so far this season, but everyone's talking about Chet Holmgren or Victor Wembanyama. Can you finally settle the debate on Wembanyama or Chet?
Oof, man, that's a tough one. And you know
are you
why?
A Spurs because... fan or a Thunder fan, Abe? I guess I should ask that first.
Yeah, you got to ask that first. So this is where I'm torn. I never watched basketball growing up. First time that I really watched was when I was at OU. And we definitely went to a couple games. We had Kevin Durant and Westbrook and Harden and Ibaka and that team. So it was really easy to become an OKC fan. So they definitely have a soft spot. But now I've been here for, I guess, 10 years. And I got to split it. Like I said, I'm not a huge basketball guy, but I love watching them play. So I'm going to go 50-50. I can't make the call for you there, man.
There we go. Well, Abe, we really appreciate it. Like I said, follow Abe at Live Miami coming up April 5th through the 7th. And let's talk again after you win that one, all right?
All right, boys. Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate
the invite.
Thanks, Abe. You're the man, brother.
See you, boys. Thank you.
Hey everyone, T-Dub here. I want to take a second to tell you about my good friends at McCray Roofing. Not too long ago, my roof was in desperate need of repair. There was extensive hail damage and I had many leaks that needed attention. Not only did Jeff and his staff build me a new roof, but they walked me through step-by-step of the claims process, which is something that I was very, very concerned about. Everything from the initial inspection of the roof to analyze all the damage to meeting with the insurance adjuster to make sure they were aware of every damaged area, making sure my claim was accurate. Their custom copper creations are truly beautiful and add a great touch to any roof. Not only do they do residential roofs, but they have an elite list of commercial customers, including Gallardia Country Club, Oak Tree National, and Bass Pro Shops. Check out their website at McCrayRoofing.com to view some of their work yourself and give them a call at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000.
We are back on the other side of the break here on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. As I mentioned before the break, one of the founding fathers of the 73rd Hole Podcast is joining us today, Colby Powell, formerly of the Golf Channel. Colby, what's going on?
Not a lot, guys. When I texted you last week and said that I wanted to come on, I said that I was texting you before Rory won so that you wouldn't think I was coming on just because Rory got the victory, and then I proceeded to watch Rory hit not his tee shot, but his second shot in the water on number 6 at Bay Hill, 3 out of the 4 days. 3 out of the 4. All you have to do is not pull hook it left. 3 out of the 4 days he's in the drink on his approach, and here I am eating my words.
Well, Colby, obviously you're joining us at a perfect time, sandwiched in between Bay Hill, the signature event, and the Players coming up next week. I guess let's start with Scottie Scheffler. Scottie learned how to putt, and earlier on in the show, we talked about and broke down how well Scottie Scheffler putted at Bay Hill. Now he heads into a place where he won last year at TPC Sawgrass. What are your thoughts about the favorite this week, Scottie Scheffler at the Players?
Yeah, when you look at the odds board, it's amazing the drop from Scotty to Rory. Scotty's 6-1, Rory's 16-1, and the next best odds is Xander Schauffele at 22-1. There's only one player within 15 slots of Scottie Scheffler on the odds board, and it's about where he should be. I told you guys on the preseason preview at the start of the year that I had Scotty as my player of the year. I thought the putting could only get better by default, and I told you he was going to win 5 times, including a major. That prediction officially has legs. I wasn't so sure after Genesis because the putter was so bad, but he switched to the mallet. Obviously, that helped. And the ball striking, I honestly thought that the putter would come up a little bit this year and there would be a dip in the ball striking because I thought that there had to be a dip in the ball striking. You just can't continue to hit it that well while you're also figure skating. And yet, Scottie Scheffler continues to hit it that well while also figure skating on every swing. It is mind-blowing. I mean, seriously, when he hits one outside 20 feet with anything less than like a 6-iron, I mean, that's not a very good shot right now for Scotty, and that just gives him such a leg up on the entire field. Now, do I think he'll win this week? No. TPC Sawgrass has proven over the decades and decades that it's a very hard place to repeat performances. Guys just don't win back-to-back at Sawgrass. Very, very rarely do guys win twice in their career at Sawgrass just because of how random the course is with the water and the railroad ties and just an element of chaos that gets introduced. But yeah, Scotty right now is far and away the best player in the world. On weeks that he doesn't putt, he's going to be hovering in the top 10, still with a chance to win. On weeks that he does putt, he's going to run away from the field, and Sunday's going to get boring, just like what we saw a couple days ago.
Yeah, Colby, really the only thing going against Scotty this week is that he is a defending champion, and a defending champion has never won, or no one has ever defended their title at the Players' Championship in 50 years now of history. So good luck to Scotty Scheffler trying to beat that. But if anyone was going to do it, it would be him gaining more than a shot on the greens last week. I did not think I would ever see that happen, and what happened, he ended up winning by 5 shots. But Colby, I want to ask you about someone that you mentioned just then ago, Rory McIlroy, who you said in the group text was your pick to win last week, but I look at how he's played since he's coming over to the United States. He won over in the DP World Tour, but since then does not have a top 20 finish on the PGA Tour. Is this the week that Rory finally turns it around?
No, I don't think so. He's hitting the ball unbelievably with the driver. I think the putter's been fine. Not great, but fine. 2 weeks ago, at wherever they were at, Cognizant, he led the field in stroke gain, tee to green. He gained like more than 9 strokes. He just couldn't make a putt, and he was going to a place he'd won before at the Arnold Palmer. He was driving it so great, I figured the long rough would get other guys and it wouldn't get him. But he has a serious approach play issue right now that just has to be figured out. We all know that you can't win at the highest level if your approach play is in the tank. And I think he's outside the top 150 right now in stroke gain approaching the green. And he said after last week at Bay Hill that he just has a case of the left with the iron. And I'm like, yeah, thanks, Rory. We noticed whenever you hooked it in the water with your approach shot on 6, 3 out of the 4 days. And that wasn't the only hole. He kept missing left. So I don't know if that's an easy fix that he can turn right around, but I don't think he can do it in 3 days before he goes out to Sawgrass, which has some pretty demanding greens and some holes that you just simply can't miss left. Obviously, 17, you can't miss just about anywhere, but 18, you can't miss left. 16, you can, but, I mean, are you just going to bail out over there behind the tree? I really don't know. So that to trust Rory down the stretch at Sawgrass with the way he's hitting his iron, I just can't do it right now. I'm going to have to see it with the iron with Rory before I really believe that he's back to the player that can win these big time events.
Yeah, maybe Rory needs Scotty to give Rory a tip. Rory gave Scotty the tip and said switch to the mallet, and guess what? Scotty wins at Bay Hill. Maybe Scotty needs to reciprocate that tip and give Rory some ball striking tips. Let's talk about one of your cowboys, Colby. Let's talk about Victor Hovland, who finished tied for third at the Players last year. It's been a little bit of a slow start for our man Victor starting off in 2024. He finished 22nd at the Century. He finished tied for 58th at Pebble Beach, 19th at Riv. Then he finishes 36th last week at Bay Hill. And fellas, what was better at the end of the year last year for Victor Hovland? It was the chipping, and the short game was so, so solid. Well, then over the offseason, he gets rid of his short game coach, Colby, and the last three tournaments that he's played in, he has lost shots around the greens, and not just, you know, a few shots. He's losing over a shot per round, or over a half a shot per round in some instances, and it's really hurting him around the greens, even though he's putting decently and hitting the ball great like he normally does. The short game's back to being below average. What are your thoughts on Victor Hovland this week at a place that he obviously likes, finishing top five here last year?
Yeah, I think slow is a good way to describe it. I think I would also use the word weird. Like, it's been a weird start to the season for Hovland. He shows up in Hawaii, and we find out that him and Joey Mayonnaise have split, and nobody knows why. And nobody, like, there's not even rumblings. There's not even rumors. They just split, and nobody's talking about it. And it's so odd that Hovland was a world-class player who had this one weakness in his game. And in this year with Joe Mayo, that becomes a strength of his game, and he turns into a world beater. And then, poof, it's gone. Just like that? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. And I think, quite frankly, right now, it's one of the most under-talked about stories in golf that those two split and that Victor Hovland's gotten off to this slow start. Now, part of the reason that it's been under-talked about, probably because he hasn't played very much golf. I mean, he played out at Kapalua, Pebble, Riv, and Bay Hill. He hasn't heated up in any of the other non-signature events, and then obviously plays the Players this week. But, I mean, is he going to take 3 more weeks off now before the Masters? I don't know. That's just not very much golf leading into Augusta for a guy that I think we all think and know deep down is capable of winning that golf tournament. He was in the mix last year at the first two majors. I just don't know if I see it for him this early in the season. Maybe it's just a slow start to the season and he plans on ramping it up more in the summer. But that's a hard sell whenever major season really I mean, it gets started pretty early. We're a few weeks away from the Masters, and then it's just boom, 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 boom with all four of those majors. So definitely a slow, weird start to the season for Hovland. I'd like to see him play some more golf so that he can get some rhythm to his game, because I don't know, Taylor. I haven't seen a lot from Hovland this year that would make me confident that the guy we saw in August and at the Ryder Cup is going to make a reemergence anytime in the very near future.
The good thing going for Hovland is that the last 2 years here at the Players, he finished third and ninth. So that's promising. And in both years, he lost strokes gained around the greens, which, as Sam alluded to, he's done the last three events. And as you said, just his best finish is 19th at the Genesis, which is, of course, he's played particularly well in the past. Nothing else I've seen in there shown any flashes of brilliance, but Victor Hovland is so talented. He's going to turn it around at some point. It might as well be this week where it has the biggest purse in the game. Golf wouldn't shock me at all, but if I was going to pick him to win, I think it would be at another event. I think he needs a little bit more time to build into it. Colby, so far we've talked about the first analytic favorite, Scotty Scheffler. We talked about Hovland and Rory, who are fourth and fifth. I'm going to go ahead and just give the next three analytical favorites to ask you about, because they all have the same theme of being from California. That's Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, and Patrick Cantlay. I look at all three of these guys, and they seem to all have something iffy about them for this tournament. Schauffele's been playing okay golf. He's has a lot of he's had some top tens in his 25th last week, but at this tournament, he finished second in 2018, 19th in 2023. But sandwiched in between there, he has three missed cuts. Patrick Cantlay's best finish at this course is T19th. And Colin Morikawa missed a cut last week at Arnold Palmer, which I didn't even think was possible. They cut like three players, Colby. So can you please talk me into one of these three guys, why I should pick them?
Yeah, the three were Morikawa, Fleetwood, and Fitzpatrick. It's crazy in a cut that in an event that had so few cuts, that three kind of names. I mean, between the three of those, they've got three major championships. Yeah, it was wild that those guys missed the cut. Morikawa was horrible. He hit one of the worst shots I've ever seen in the six from the fairway. It landed like 40 yards in the middle of the lake. I don't know what's going on with his game right now. I don't have a ton of confidence in any of those three. I would lean Xander because he's just always more consistent than the other two. I think the other two have more highs and lows. But I don't have a ton of confidence in any of those three. If you want me to go out and take one of the California guys, I think I'd rather take Homa, who's just been kind of plodding along, playing decent, you know, good but not great golf, but feels like after a solid week last week, he could pop. I think Homa is a better play if you want to go to the top of the ranking California guys, because I don't know, man. Xander, Cantlay, Morikawa. Morikawa and Cantlay especially just feel lost. That final round at the Genesis, I know that Cantlay was sick, but I still think mentally that takes a lot out of you whenever everyone's expecting you to win at a place like that, and then Hideki comes out there and makes a few turkeys at Riv and just goes insane and you blow up on Sunday. I think that affected Cantlay a bit mentally. So I don't know that I love Xander, Morikawa, or Cantlay. If you made me pick one of the three, I'd probably go Xander, but I would lean Homa from the Cali guys.
That's very, very smart there, Colby, because I might be leaning toward picking Max Homa in the one and done. You'll see later on in the show. But Homa, last week, finished top 10 at the Arnold Palmer. He finished 16th at Riv, and he finished tied for 6th here last year for Homa at the Players. So a solid, solid pick there if you're trying to go California guys who are there. Now let's talk about a California guy, the GOAT, who is not going to be there. We didn't see him at Bay Hill either. Colby, last time we saw him was at Riv with the bad boiler, which they said it was the flu, but now that he doesn't play in Bay Hill or the Players, is there something more to this?
Yeah, I'm still not buying the idea that the flu was an excuse to cover up an injury, because Cantlay got sick that week. I just listened to a podcast that had Jordan Spieth on it last week, and he said that even if he hadn't gotten DQ'd at Genesis, that he would have really struggled to play on Saturday because he was so sick. So I don't necessarily buy that it was covering up an injury, but I do think Taylor and I talked about this over the weekend. It's odd that he's not playing this week and doesn't want to get more reps, especially because he played Seminole last week. He had the opportunity to use a cart. He chose not to. He chose to walk. The Players just seemed kind of like the perfect spot, the flagship event for the tour. You get Tiger there, you drum up interest, all those things. And for him not to show up, I don't know, maybe the body doesn't totally feel right yet, or maybe he thinks if he were to play this week, it wouldn't feel right between now and Augusta. But, I mean, I don't know, unless he goes out and plays at Valspar, where maybe he thinks he can get it around that track a little bit and not have to go so low and make so many birdies. So maybe he thinks that he could be more competitive there. I don't know, guys. I don't think we see him again until Augusta, and Taylor, obviously, if we don't see him again until Augusta, he's going to be a non-factor there because he just won't have played enough golf. But I think it's just the reality of the Tiger experience right now is he can say that he wants to play once a month, and in his mind, I think he does, but I don't think his body's there.
It truly is weird that I thought he was going to play Bay Hill. That's what I thought. And then all of a sudden, he does play that, so you think, okay, well, he's for sure going to play the Players. And then you hear the things that Seminoles you were alluding to, and you think, oh, he has to play, and he might make the cut if he plays good. The only thing I could think of is that maybe it's either the body is really ailing him and he just wants to play Augusta and not hurt himself, or maybe he will try to play Valspar because Bay Hill and TPC Sawgrass are two extremely difficult courses and he probably wouldn't have sniffed the cut in all honesty. So either sign isn't good in all honesty. Either he doesn't think his body's right, he doesn't think his game particularly right for those two courses, which is not ideal whatsoever. And it makes an interesting point because I would have loved to see him this week because there's going to be a lot of intriguing things happen because we talked about all the favorites. Really, Scottie Scheffler, no one's defended their title here. The next, all the favorites we just alluded to. Then after that, analytically, like seventh is Russell Henley, Siwoo Kim's eighth. Down there after that, you have Justin Thomas, Shane Lowry, Shane Burns, Will Zalatoris, some guys that you might think contend. But it's a little bit weird that it's supposedly the best field in the game of golf, as I've been hearing on the Golf Channel all week. And it seems like everyone at the top has something wrong with it.
I think it used to be the best field in golf. I don't think it is anymore. I think that would probably belong to the PGA Championship, if I had to guess. Maybe the U.S. Open. I do think that there are some names beyond the peak favorites. I still think the betting odds and the analytics and stuff still give it to the name, Xander, JT, Victor. But the guys in that very next tier, one level down, are playing much better golf. I'm talking Will Zalatoris. I'm talking Hideki Matsuyama. And I'm talking Wyndham Clark, who I just cannot begin to fathom why Wyndham Clark is still not getting respect. All the guy's done in the last, 10 months is win the Wells Fargo, which was a signature event. He stared down Rory and won at LACC for his first major championship. He won at Pebble by setting the course record on Saturday. No, they didn't have to play the final 18, but everybody knew that weather was coming. He's the one that went out and got it done. Guys, I'm looking at the odds board right now. Wyndham Clark is 60-1 this week. Corey Connors and Tommy Fleetwood are 55-1. It doesn't make any sense. Wyndham Clark, to me, is one of the five best players in the game right now. He might have been a Cinderella when he won at Wells Fargo, but he's not that anymore. He shows up on a leaderboard almost every time it's time to show up. Sam, what is going on? Why does Wyndham Clark get no respect?
No, I totally agree with you. I don't know why he doesn't get any respect either. I think part of it might be the fact that he was a world beater in college, but when he started out as a professional, he was a late bloomer. And I think that some people still have it in their mind that maybe last year was just a one-off, a one-hit wonder, but it's not. This guy was a world beater, and he's back to being what he was back in college. The guy is a world-class talent, and we're seeing it on the biggest stages in golf. Like you said, staring down Xander at Quail Hollow last year, the U.S. Open, and then this year, like you said, breaking the course record at Pebble Beach. The guy is really, really solid, and he is one of the up-and-coming stars in the game. Both of you guys mentioned one guy that I got to get to, and the key words are he's back healthy, or his back is healthy. Will Zalatoris is back playing really, really good golf. 13th at the Farmers, 2nd at the Genesis, and 4th last week at Bay Hill. And he's gaining more than a shot and a half per round in the last two events, strokes gained approach. So his iron game is back, and that's what makes him so good. And he has the long putter, and the short putts look a whole lot more solid than they did before. Look out for Willie Z, maybe not this week at the Players, but possibly this week at the Players, right, Colby?
Yeah, we've seen him show up in big-time events throughout his career. A number of runner-up finishes already at major championships, missed out on a playoff with Matt Fitzpatrick by maybe an inch or two there on the 18th. And I don't know about you guys, but he is one of the more fun players to watch on TV to me because, it's not like Spieth where it's just total chaos and you have no idea what's going to happen, and so that's fun to watch. With Willie Z, it's more of like, you know what you're going to get off the tee, on the approach. It's these towering shots with very little movement to them and a beautiful golf swing. And then you get to the green, and it's like, all right, let's watch and see what happens. And there's a little bit less of that now with the broomstick, but there's still some of it, I think, where you still see him look a bit uncomfortable at times. But he's a really good player, guys. And I'm just, I'm so happy that he's healthy, because he obviously got the offers to go to live like everybody else. Then he had the back surgery and had to go away. And you don't know how those things are going to go after an injury. I mean, look at Daniel Berger, for example. Daniel Berger was legitimately one of the top, 10, 20 players in the world. And he's been out of sight, out of mind for like 2 years because he got injured. So, yeah, it's good to have Willie G back. And Taylor, I find him to be about as fun to watch as anybody. And I think it would be a lot of fun if he were in contention.
Well, what's fascinating is that he's so naturally talented. And the way that you know that is he's not completely revamped his swing, but he's changed a lot after this back injury. He used to pick his arms up really high on the backswing. And what that caused him to do was he had to put so much bend in his right side to be able to get the club back down and shallow it out. So what that leads to is the right side of your back is bending, torquing the back at 120 miles an hour. Nothing about that is going to feel good whatsoever. And you can tell whenever you slow-mo the swing down, you can see visually how different it is, especially with how little or less his back bends now. It truly is crazy that he's been able to do that. And with the putter as well, he's on the greens. He's gained strokes the last four events. Colby, there must be something to that broomstick because you've added one to the back.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you know that, Sam? Did you know that I had become Team Broomstick?
No, you went away from Bing Crenshclaw?
So I've still got the claw working on my bottom hand, but
okay.
I was telling Taylor, man, I had so many rounds last year that could have so easily been even par, and they turned into 75 because I don't like to use the Y word, but I kind of got the yip a little bit, and it was just I couldn't get over it. And I'm not a putter switcher. For the last 10 years prior to this switch, I had used the same putter, the same grip, the exact same stroke on every putt I hit for 10 years. And then, I don't know, one day I just lost it. It was totally gone. So for Christmas, I got the Lab Golf broomstick, very similar to what Willie V and Adam Scott and those guys are using. And game changer on the short ones. I'm telling you, you look goofy. Even my wife's making fun of me. Somebody I hadn't played with in a long time saw me out on the 18th green a couple of weeks ago and drove up and made a funny comment from the side. It's just people give you a hard time, but I stand over a three-footer and I feel like it's going in the hole. So that's a better feeling for me, and I guess Willie's feeling some of that same stuff.
That's good stuff. Speaking of catching up with our man Colby, our listeners out there don't obviously text in our group text, and they don't keep up with Colby as much as we do since he's been off the podcast. How's baby Layla? How's your wife Dana? How's life since leaving the Golf Channel, leaving the 73rd hole, all of that? What are we doing now in Colby Powell's life?
Life is great, man. The reason we're doing this kind of early this evening is because I've got to get to gymnastics, which I never would have thought that toddler gymnastics would be the highlight of my week.
I thought you meant for yourself. Are you not doing a floor routine?
Believe it or not, whenever you do gymnastics with an almost two-year-old, you're basically doing gymnastics yourself. You have to lead them through everything. But it truly is the highlight of my week. She's an amazing little girl. So much fun to be around. And I think I've decided her birthday's here in a few weeks. I think what I'm going to get her as a present just for me, because I'm going to take her to the golf course with me a good bit this summer probably, and I want her to have her own actual putter that she can putt actual golf balls with into the hole. So I think I'm going to take one of my old ones, not the Spider, but one of my older ones, and get it cut down to like, 12 inches or something, so that she can have her own little putter to walk around with and knock putts in all summer. You got to start them young, right? So, yeah, life is good. The wife's good. I'm good. Layla's great. And, yeah, everything's awesome.
Yeah, definitely don't do the Spider. That's going up in value after last week.
No, Spider is. Even if I never go back to it to putt with on a regular basis, and maybe I will, maybe I won't, but even if I don't, that I'm never doing anything with that. That putter holds a special place in my heart.
I do want to let the listeners know that the other night when I was with Colby, we had a full sit-down breakdown because I heard Layla was in gymnastics, and I wanted to make sure. Now, you're taking her to the golf course, right? Like, this is definitely an integral part of her routine is golfing. You're not putting gymnastics over golf at this point. And I got the full clarification that is not the case. Golf is currently number one, and hopefully it will be number one forever. And hopefully we'll see Layla on the LPGA Tour here in about 20 years or so. But, Colby, the moment of truth has arrived in the biggest tournament on the PGA Tour. Winner gets $4.5 million. I want to hear your winner.
Yeah, I don't think Scotty repeats. I don't think Rory's game is in the condition to do it right now. We talked about some of the other favorites. I really wrestled with about five names this week making my prediction. It was Justin Thomas, Will Zalatoris, Hideki Matsuyama, Wyndham Clark, and Max Homa. Those were the five that I just kept coming back to. And at the end of the day, I just kind of feel like Max Homa is due for a big one. And at the players, I think you can dig into all the data and the analytics you want to, but at a certain point, this tournament just produces random winners, and it's hard to predict. And I kind of feel like it's time for Homa to take that next step of winning one of the big ones. So I'm going to go Max Homa at 28-1 this week at Sawgrass. And I think if it happens, he would be a very popular winner.
I like that pick. You're going to have to stay with us after the break, talking about our listeners. After the break, we will give our picks, T-Dub and I, on the 73rd Hole Podcast. Colby, thanks for joining us today. We'll talk Masters Week, okay?
Yep, love you guys. Talk in a few weeks. See ya.
That's Colby Powell, one of the founding fathers of the 73rd Hole Podcast and formerly of the Golf Channel. As I mentioned, our picks coming up after the break here on Oklahoma's Leader in Golf, the 73rd Hole Podcast.
We'd like to welcome in our newest sponsor for the 24 season, Allcom Security. They're located in Midwest City. It's an Oklahoma-based company by Oklahomans. If you have any alarm needs, whether it's home or business, or what they have now that I am fascinated by, and I think you would be too, they're OKC security trailers. These trailers aren't just your average surveillance units. They're equipped with cutting-edge technology that can distinguish between humans and vehicles. Imagine that. With precise accuracy, these trailers detect any unwanted activity on your property, whether it's a person wandering where they shouldn't be or a vehicle creeping around after hours. It's like having a vigilant guardian watching over your domain. I have personally seen these units, and they are amazing. So if you have any alarm need, please call my good friends at Allcom Security, 405-732-9000, or just look them up on the web, Allcom Security.
And we are back on the other side of the break on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. Thank you again to our man, Colby Powell, who is going with Max Homa this week at the Players' Championship. T-Dub, it is time for you and me to give our picks for the players this week. We're getting two one-and-done picks this week in our one-and-done. By the way, I used Scottie Scheffler last week. I took the risk, and it paid off for me, $4 million in the bank in the one-and-done challenge where you can only pick one golfer each week and then you can't use them the rest of the year. I can't use Scottie Scheffler again. That's the negative. The positive is he definitely won me some points last week in that one-and-done challenge. This week, T-Dub, at the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass, who are you going with?
Well, in our one-and-done pool, we do pick two players this week, so I guess I have two shots at winning this thing, so I guess all that can do is benefit me. This first pick, also one point I want to allude before I make my picks, $4.5 million this week to the winner. I don't believe any event that we have, the rest of the one-and-done pool or anyone out there in the one-and-done pool should be any bigger than this. So if you're going to run out the big dogs, you might as well do it. And I'm going to run out the biggest dog you have possible, Sam. Whenever you include, you got the $4 million this past week. He's the defending champion. There's going to be tons of people that pick him in the one and done in our other pool because I believe only 10 out of 100 and something picked him last week or something like that. That I just have complete FOMO. I have fear of missing out like no other. So I have to run him out there because if he does win, I'm going to kick myself in the butt like no other. If I saw any sort of puzzle as we saw this last week, he's going to win by 5 or 6 shots. So I do think that Spaceship will break the trend this week. No player has been able to successfully defend the players. I think that he will break that trend this week, and I will collect $4.5 million. Hopefully that would be ideal. My other one-and-done pick, Sam, going to pick a guy who is completely trending in the right direction, someone who we ripped for months upon months on this podcast last year, saying there's no way he should be on the Ryder Cup team. And rightfully so, he shouldn't have been with the way that he played, but he actually played halfway decent and carried Justin Thomas carried Jordan Spieth in the Ryder Cup. But I'm picking Justin Thomas this week. He's been playing some solid golf. He finished 12th this past week
at the Arnold Palmer. Missed the cut at the Genesis, but he was playing with his big brother, Tiger. And he doesn't seem to play very well whenever he does that. He missed the cut at Augusta when he was paired with him the first two rounds last year. So that's a trend for JT that doesn't tend to pan out very well. Before that, finished 12th at the Waste Management, finished 6th at Pebble Beach, 3rd at the American Express. So off to a good start for JT, playing some very solid golf, played some good golf also at the end of 2023, right around the Ryder Cup and after that point. So I think Justin Thomas will show that continued good form as he's shown over these last few months. And the 2021 champion, where he played there, he's finished 33rd and 60th the 2 years since then. So hopefully he does a little bit better than that, and we can see something similar to like he did in 2021.
No doubt. JT definitely playing some better golf so far in 2024. My picks for this week, I'll start off with a guy who has already won a signature event so far in 2024. Give me Hideki Matsuyama. Hideki is figuring out the putting, and that's what has hindered him over this past year. And over his last three tournaments, he gained a half shot per round at Phoenix. He won the Genesis, where he gained about a shot and a half per round on the greens. And then at Bay Hill, he gained a half a shot per round on the greens. And in those three finishes at the Waste Management, he goes 22nd. He wins at the Genesis, and he finishes 12th last week at Bay Hill. His recent form is very, very good. And last year at the Players Championship, Hideki Matsuyama finished solo fifth place. So I'm going Hideki with my first pick for this week at TPC Sawgrass. My second pick this week is one that Colby Powell mentioned earlier. I really like Max Homa this week. Max, after a couple of bad tournaments, has righted the ship. He finished 66th at Pebble Beach, then he missed the cut at the Waste Management. But then after that, he finished tied for 16th at Riv, and then he finishes tied for 8th last week at Bay Hill, and he gained a shot and a half per round on the greens. Really putted well last week on those Bermuda greens. Still on Bermuda this week at TPC Sawgrass, so I really like that recent form. And then as far as previous course history, last year he finished tied for 6th on this golf course. The year before that, he finished tied for 13th. So he likes TPC Sawgrass. And if I'm going to pick, like you said earlier, T-Dub, out of those California guys, the Morikawas, Cantlays, Shoffleys, if I'm going to pick out of the California guys, I'm going Max Homa this week. So give me Hideki Matsuyama and Max Homa.
Two very solid picks there, Sam. I expect both of them to do well. Both of them had really good course history here, as you alluded to. Homa finished the 6th and 13th the last 2 years, and then Hideki has, I believe, out of everyone who's played the tournament who's in this field, he is, let me calculate this right here, he is 7th out of everyone in the field, and majority of those have only played 4 rounds. So out of everyone who has played more than 10 rounds on this course, he is 4th in strokes gained. So I expect Hideki to play very well. He's been playing some very good golf as of recently, so that is very good trend. Some unique names here on the analytics I want to point out. Russell Henley and Siwoo Kim are 7th and 8th analytic favorites, respectively, ahead of guys like Justin Thomas, Will Zalatoris, and Sam Burns. I find that very unique. Both of them have been playing some pretty solid golf, and I think that's fairly crazy, but look out for them to potentially play well. And then someone who's 6,400 on DraftKings, Aaron Rye, is down in like the 20th favorite to win, ahead of guys like Hideki Matsuyama, Tony Finau, Cameron Young, and Ben Ahn, who's been playing some good golf. So a couple of anomalies there in the analytics I wanted to look out for, Sam, because a couple of names that I would not think would be ranked as highly as they are up there. So it'll be interesting to see if the analytics are right, or if the big names, or the bigger names at least, prevail.
Another long shot guy, since long shots tend to do well at TPC Sawgrass, we got to mention our man Austin Eckroat, who won at the Cognizant Classic on PGA National, a course with a whole bunch of water, similar to TPC Sawgrass. Definitely got to look out for him. By the way, he finished tied for 36th last week at Bay Hill after his win at the Cognizant Classic. Maybe 3 weeks in a row, you might have a little bit of fatigue there, T-Dub, but I do like the course fit for a guy like Austin Eckroat, to be honest.
I do, yes, as well. Yes, you need to be accurate off of the tee around TPC Sawgrass. A lot of visually intimidating holes, kind of quirkiness off of the tee, and you need to be able to commit to your lines, and I think Austin is built out for that as well. And as you mentioned, his ability to putt on the greens, I think, will prevail with him as well. And you look at someone maybe like Brian Harman with our man Scott Tway on the back. He finished 3rd back here in 2023. So maybe that he could come out. He finished 12th last week at the Arnold Palmer and actually lost strokes on the green. He gained 1.75 shots approach, and as he always does, gained shots off the tee by hitting a good amount of his fairways. So maybe look for Brian Harman to have a little bit of good form. He's also finished 8th here back in 2019 and 2015. So a little bit of hit or miss on this course, and maybe he's starting to trend in the right direction. He hasn't played particularly well. He finished 5th of the Century and 18th of the Sony. Hasn't finished better than 44th since then, up until last week. So maybe our man Scott Tway and Brian Harman will get it figured out this week with the biggest purse on the PGA Tour.
T-Dub, last guy that people might not be thinking about since we're talking about some long shots here, maybe some best bets that you want to throw some long shot money on. How about our guy Ludvig Åberg, who has been playing very consistent golf, 25th at the Arnold Palmer, 19th at the Genesis. He did finish 2nd in the rain-shortened Pebble Beach. He finished tied for 9th at the Farmers out at Torrey Pines. He's been playing some very solid golf. Now, it is his first time playing in the Players' Championship. Hard to believe that you play in a Ryder Cup before a Players, but that's what Ludvig Åberg is doing this week. What are your thoughts on our man from Texas Tech?
Well, the talent is 100% there. He's the 11th ranked player, analytically 10th in the OWGR, 13th in the FedEx Cup standings. So it's, and as you mentioned, the recent play is there. He's actually gained strokes on the greens his last 5 events. So putting exceptionally well to go with that long ball off the tee. As you mentioned, this is his first time here. I think that's going to be the thing that holds him back. And also, too, the TPC Sawgrass is not necessarily a bomber's paradise. It's more of an accuracy fit. And Åberg hits the ball so extremely far that it's usually a course that he can dominate is one that he particularly can overpower. So maybe you'd look at more accurate guys. One of the reasons why TPC Sawgrass is prone to throw kind of the unique name out there to win, because you don't have to be an absolute bomber to win at this place, as you do the majority of other courses. But the talent's there, and if he can know where to plot the ball around and not take driver on every single hole and have decent course management, with how well he's been putting, wouldn't shock me one bit if he goes out and play well. An alarming thing is last week he lost 0.7 shots with his irons, which is something that we haven't seen going all the way back to August of last year. So maybe it's a fluke thing, but maybe it's a trend to look at. If he's not hitting his irons particularly well, it's going to be hard to get around TPC Sawgrass.
No doubt about it. And then guys that I think you should fade this week, Jordan Spieth being one of them. He did finish, tied for 30th last week, made the cut, but didn't drive the ball very good at all coming off that DQ at Riviera. He doesn't have great course history here, and neither does a guy like Tony Finau doesn't have great course history at the Players as well. I would stay away from those guys if you're asking me who I'm fading this week.
I think that would be a good call there, Sam. Someone who I'm going to go ahead and fade on there is Matty Fitz, who finished 9th back here in 2021, but has missed the cut the last 2 years here, and then missed the cut last week at the Arnold Palmer, where he lost strokes gained off the tee, lost strokes gained with his irons, and lost strokes gained approach. So the 11th ranked player in the world, 25th player analytically, I will not be picking in any format this week.
Speaking of Matty Fitz, T-Dub, have you gotten a chance to watch any of the Netflix series Full Swing?
No, I have not. No, I haven't gotten to check that out. I've seen maybe a couple of clips here and there on Twitter, some things that my friends have sent me. But if you've had a diagnosis for it, feel free to let me in. But I will definitely not be an expert on that category whatsoever.
We can wait until you finish it. I don't want to spoil anything, even though you already know how these tournaments finish out. The thing that bugs me about watching the Netflix series, it's cool to hear the behind-the-scenes footage, but at the same time, you're not necessarily getting behind-the-scenes footage because these cameras aren't following these guys around 24 hours. Do you see what I'm saying? So they still know that they have a camera on them, and they're kind of sending a message to the Netflix people, right? And so that's one thing that bothers me. The other thing is they spent like 10 minutes on the Masters and spent 10 minutes on the PGA, and they follow one guy's story, I guess, throughout the year on each episode. So they kind of jump around a little bit. I don't know. I feel like you could tell a whole lot more storylines, and I would like to hear a lot more behind-the-scenes stuff than we even did. But I get it. It's a Netflix series. You got to cut out a whole lot of the interesting stuff, T-Dub.
One thing I did see is, I guess, Justin Thomas threw a slightly unnecessarily shot at Mito Pereira. I mean, Mito's shot on 18 at Southern was horrible. But did he really need to thank him in his speech for making a double on the 72nd hole of a major championship to lose by one? That's just a little bit of a nut slap right there, man.
Yeah, in the champions dinner last year at the PGA Championship, coming off his victory the previous year at Southern Hills, Justin Thomas said, and I want to toast to Mito Pereira. He's the reason why I'm sitting here today. Mito did get electrocuted on the 18th tee at Southern Hills, but you don't got to bring that up, especially when you know the Netflix cameras are there.
I understand it may be all in good fun, but man, yeah, it's going to rub the wrong way, man, because opportunities in major championships do not come up very often whatsoever. When you step on the 72nd hole with a one-shot lead and all you have to do is make a par, the 18th hole at Southern Hills is an extremely difficult hole to make a par on, but at the same time, you have to get it done if you want to hoist the trophy, and unfortunately, Mito didn't, and unfortunately, Mito's going to see that, probably saw that clip before, and I don't know if it made him happy. I don't know if he got a laugh out of it. Who knows? But who knows if Mito will ever get that opportunity again.
Yeah, if I'm Mito, we might be coming to blows next time I see Justin Thomas. T-Dub, we will give our full review of Full Swing after we get the time to watch it. We've both been working like dogs doing the radio, and you're doing the teaching. But speaking of radio, our 73rd hole radio show is starting this week, and it's starting tomorrow. We're recording this podcast on Tuesday evening. Our radio show will be every single Wednesday on the Sports Animal, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the Sports Animal, every single Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. local time. So if you are here in Oklahoma City, definitely tune in and interact with us on the 73rd hole radio show. By the way, if there's a Thunder game on a Wednesday night, we will move the show to Thursday, but you can also listen to our 73rd hole podcast on the sportsanimal.com and the Sports Animal app, as well as golfoklahoma.org. T-Dub, I'm fired up to be on the Sports Animal again with you this year.
Oh, I'm extremely hyped for this, Sam. The last couple of years, we've been doing it on Sunday mornings. Now we've been able to move it to majority of the time Wednesday nights, as you alluded to, of the off chance that we may do it on a Thursday evening. And I think that works better for both of us, and I think that'll be better for our fans as well. I know a lot of people have things going on Sunday mornings, so now I hopefully will be able to engage a little bit more in the golf community, and hopefully people will be able to listen to our great insights, Sam, because I know that we may do some idiotic things, but at least that I know when it comes to golf, we know what we're talking about. So hopefully we can bring some insight to everyone that loves this great game.
No doubt about it. And we have to thank our friends at Enjoy Vision in Oklahoma City who are sponsoring the 73rd hole radio show this year. Go get your LASIK done. I did it. I can see 2015, and I only got it done a couple weeks ago. It's the best decision that I've ever made. T-Dub, any parting thoughts before we get out of here and let people go watch this great week of golf at the Players Championship?
Well, Sam, you just had to one-up me. After I had my LASIK, as it was the best decision I ever made, I have 2016 vision, so you just had to one-up me with 2015. So congratulations on that, but maybe I can upgrade to the 2015, but mine was not as successful as yours by just a smidge.
There you go. Yeah. T-Dub, anytime that I'm in a scramble now and absolutely bomb a drive, I'll never lose my ball, even though most of those drives go into the trees. Thanks to Enjoy Vision, I can always see where the ball is going. We will be back next week here on the podcast next Tuesday, and then next Wednesday we will be on the radio show as well on the Sports Animal and the Sports Animal app. Also, go follow us on social media at the 73rd hole on X and at 73rd hole on Instagram. Thank you to T-Dub. Thank you to our man Colby Powell, and definitely big thank you to Abe Answer coming on the show after his win on Live at Live Hong Kong. This has been Sam Humphries on Oklahoma's Leader in Golf, the 73rd Hole Podcast.